Welcome back to the Discovering Forestry podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Corey Lofi, alongside Ann Arborjet Joe Aitken. Joe, happy September. How are you doing?
I'm good, Corey. I'm really good. You know what? Another month flew by. I can't believe Labor Day came by. Here we are. What's it, September? Is it the 7th already?
We're recording on the 7th, yep.
Recording on the 7th of September. You know, I know in a couple of our podcasts coming up, we'll talk about some of the cool changes and everything, but what's going on in the woods. But let's kind of talk about what we're wrapping up right now. You know, you think about what you and I do for a living. What are the guys doing, man? The season's ending. What have you been up to?
What have I been up to? Well, a couple of weeks ago, we rode on the Tour de Trees, and that was a highlight for sure. But right now, this is the time of year where we're kind of wrapping up loose ends. A lot of small businesses, a lot of companies are kind of doing some of their one-off treatments. But I think a bigger part of what people in our industry are doing is they're setting up winter work, winter pruning. And of course, you and I are training people and teaching people to set up opportunities for the fall and for next spring. But man, I've been planning because this is started about 6 or 8 weeks of travel and it's here. It's now. So I'll be heading back to the Midwest, meeting some family, friends, and then knocking out some distributor meetings in Nebraska. And then it's rinse and repeat. You know, I like to stop in each of these markets, you know, at least once or twice a quarter. And it's that time of year where you got to do just one more hi and hello. But everybody has energy right now. I like it, Joe.
It's very positive. Very positive.
What are you doing?
You know, it's kind of the same. You know, I'm really involved with Michigan Tree Climbing Championship. That's coming up. This Friday, we got a day of service. We're going to prep the trees. It was actually fun today. We initiated a gypsy moth trial with Dr. Don Grossman, who has been a guest on our podcast. And there was a evaluation in July. And today we had to harvest tissue to do a go, no go test on amount of product and foliage. So I got to hang out in the woods today with the pole pruner, nipping some buds. You know, I can't stress how valuable continued research is. So all the data that we can gather, it's a perfect time for it. It was cool. It was nice. Get this stuff into the lab, see what, you know, and that's one thing I'm proud of is that what we do is we're always trying to make it a little bit better. So it was exciting. We're doing that, prepping for comps. Like, you're right. We got some back-to-back big shows coming up, which kind of leads us into, you know, what I wanted to chat about a little bit is, you know, some of the history of the industry and some of the shows that we're going to be going to and how amazing and how long these organizations have been around supporting the industry. So yeah, lots of good things. You're right. Winding down, getting your mind focused on the next quarter, because you're right. The next October, November, December is, you know, just for the holidays. We prep for shows. We prep to go out and see everybody. How was your year? How was your season? You know, how did it work? What'd you do? What'd you like? What didn't you like? What can we work on? It's fun. And we missed last year because of COVID. So,
well, and you know what I'm getting a lot in the last, I would say the last week and a half, maybe 2 weeks, is we're having a lot of people reach out to say, hey, can you come to our conference? Can you come to our workshop and talk about X, Y, and Z? So it's really cool to see what's trending in different parts of the Rocky Mountain region and the Midwest. But that, I should have brought that up earlier, Joe. That's a good point is, the prep that, you know, we put into these shows and we put into a presentation. Now, I know a professional like you who's been in the industry so long and done so many of these presentations, you can whip something up real nice. But I like to kind of get creative and approach things a little bit different, right? I approach it from not only the on the ground at the site arborist, but also bringing a little bit of science, a little bit of comedy. And yeah, I think we're going to have some really interesting topics this winter. I don't want to spoil anything yet. But if any of our listeners have conferences or workshops, trade shows coming up, and you want Joe or I or one of the members from our team to present, I'd be happy to volunteer them for you.
Yeah, volunteer them. I love. I think that's why I enjoy my job as much as I do, is that we get to get into a situation to share our knowledge. And just as much as that we work with the field in the tree care companies, it's just the opposite, that you and I have an opportunity to work with the university and their studies. So there we, you know what, I have been very lucky to have worked with like Deb McCullough, Dave Smitley, Bert Craig, Dan Herms, oh my God, Chris Williamson, Fred Miller, all throughout the Midwest. These guys are amazing professors and doing some great research. And we talked about research a second. We're always finding something a little bit better and a little bit different and a little bit smarter about ways to go about what you and I do for a living. So it gives us an opportunity not only see them, but let them know what's going on at the next level to reassure the field that people are really working on this stuff.
So. Yeah, because it matters. I mean, if we can do something that much more efficient or that much safer or that much you know, better for the plant or the environment, we're all better off.
Yeah, why not do it? And I think we kind of have to look at that. You know, and I stopped by a tree care, one of my buddies' job sites not too long ago. And then I was talking to the homeowner. He goes, you know what? You're right. We just got to do better. And what a great slogan. You know, and that reaches across the green industry, but it kind of just reaches across life. You know, just got to try to do better.
That's all we can do, is live in the present and be better than you were before.
Yeah, I like it. That's pretty philosophical. That's pretty deep.
Wow.
Just do it better. Be kinder. Do it better. You know, there's a lot of stresses in life, but we're very fortunate to work in an industry that we get to be outside and play with trees, you know.
Well, and that we have so much support in our industry. So we know we have a handful of different chemical manufacturers and different universities that are involved. But Joe, can you talk about some of the experience and some of the history maybe for like ISA, International Society of Arboriculture, and kind of how you've seen that progress over the years?
It started off pretty meek. Obviously, they all got together in the early 1900s, you know, and it started off as like a national shade tree conference, where, and it was mostly municipality and university got together, taking care of the trees, you know, and then as things grew and people realized the value, it just kept morphing and bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, the National Shade Tree Conference, or the NAA, North American Arborist Association, you know, these were all pre-names to organizations that lead our way on a daily basis. The National Arborist Association, NAA, is now TCIA. And if you think about ISA has been down a couple of names. I think it was the International Shade Tree, or I might be getting them mixed up, but you know, they've evolved through the years to represent different facets and kind of merge it all together. So there's an amazing amount of history in this industry. And we're just talking about the last 100 years. You know, you could date back anywhere from 3,000 to 5,000 years ago when people started manipulating trees for a living. So trees were being planted and moved and called and cultivated, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years ago.
Crazy.
No, we're talking about modern arboriculture. And modern arboriculture is over 100 years old. ISA ISA themselves, not your local chapters, ISA themselves will be hitting a 100-year-old birthmark coming up.
Wow, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. So there's been, you know, the history of arboriculture. I kind of hinted around a lot, you know, through the days about the Arboricultural Society of Michigan Foundation. And we started that because of my love of history and my love of arboriculture. And it's kind of interesting is that we've had some amazing pioneers of arboriculture, and ISA on their 75th anniversary created a DVD called Legends of Arboriculture. So if you, and we might've mentioned this in a previous podcast, but if you haven't had a chance to watch that, to see where this industry evolved from, you're kind of doing yourself a disservice, because if you don't know the history, you could be doomed to repeat it. So see what these guys have done in the past. It's an amazing, well put together DVD. I've been very fortunate to get to know Mr. Don Blair from Sierra Merino Birching Tile. He followed in his father's footsteps, Millard Blair, who started their company in the 20s. So Don is a big history buff in arboriculture. And if you ever see him at a show, oh my God, you gotta chat and stop and say hi. I was, you know, I think we were talking before the podcast. I can't remember Tom's last name, but you go back 20 something years ago, Tree Buzz, you know, look at the history of some of the early pioneers of finding another way to reach out to this industry. And you know what, I hope to God that we're as successful as Tree Buzz, because like you said, they're still out there doing it,
and they have so much good information and so many people that contribute, that it really is a good resource for people in our industry across the world.
Oh yeah. You know, it's international, you know, like we are now that we're international, and, you know, we have so many followers around the world. And my God, thank you guys so much for the likes and the follows and the emails and everything that we get. And I only hope that you and I can continue to do this for 20 years. Well, at least 10 for, because I do have retirement sometime, but you know what, this is something we can do as long as we're learning, have something to share. Why you just keep going?
Yeah, and it's almost therapeutic, Joe, to come on here and really just be so grateful for the experiences that we have and some of the people we get to meet and these events and the knowledge and everything. We really are blessed, and you know, it's cool to be part of this with you for sure. And it's cool to be part of this and kind of fitting in with how you're in Michigan. A lot of the people you just referenced are in Michigan. Probably one of my favorite lumberjacks of all time is said to be from Michigan.
Jeez, how far back are we going?
1875 ish.
Oh, you're talking about the big man. Bunyan.
Paul, you know, Bunyan.
Yeah, you know what? It's documented. I have a history book. Michigan, believe it or not, back in the white pine days, mid-1800s, white pine was gold. There have been so many lumber barons in the Great Lakes states, all because of timber. And this is the era of Paul Bunyan and Babe's Big Blue Ox. So it was interesting, and I remember researching Paul Bunyan, you know, because of the history, because of you know, he was tied to Michigan. I'm like, tied to Michigan? Paul Bunyan's from Michigan? So I dug deeper. Paul Bunyan is actually a Canadian. He was a big, badass Canadian logger. And his name was Joe Fournier. And like all the other big lumberjacks, they followed the jobs, they followed the money. You know what? And it's as funny as it just dawned on me, it's no different than a lot of our contract climbers today.
Same thing.
Follow the jobs, go where they needed. So he came to Michigan, and he made a name for himself. He was just a bad dude. He was logging with oxen, just like Babe. And there's two different ways you can go about this. You could go how Walt Disney took it and spun it into this nice big guy and Babe were clearing land and, you know, and he made a cartoon out of it. Or you can go what the history books say, because there was a spot in Bay City, Michigan. And if you ever have an opportunity to go to Bay City, Michigan, they produced, it was the third largest port in the U.S. for timber in the mid-1800s.
Wow.
The only one was bigger was Buffalo and Chicago. But Bay City, Michigan, in the thumb of Michigan. And there was a place, part of town was called Hell's Half Mile. So what happened is that when the loggers got paid, they ended up on Hell's Half Mile, which it was bars, brothels, hotels, bar, brothel, hotel, hotel, bar, brothel, brothel. That's all it was. And you went down there, you got drunk, you met a lady, you got a room. The next day, you went back out in the woods and logged. So like all the other loggers, there was a Joe Fournier, AKA Paul Bunyan. I got into a heated discussion, went out to throw some knuckles. It went down into the caverns underneath Bay City. And the story goes is that he was jumped and bludgeoned to death in the caverns of Bay City, Michigan.
Wow.
Yeah. You don't hear that in Walt Disney. I read it and I got the history book here and I highlighted it. It's kind of interesting how, you know, he was thought to be an ass, got what was coming. And then everybody today kind of assumes that all they remember is the Walt Disney version of Paul Bunyan, the Big Blue Ox. Well, it's a little bit.
I can remember two quotes, and I'm not even sure if these are real quotes because there's so much misinformation out there. But one of the quotes that I remember hearing in college was Paul Bunyan was notorious for saying, "No fighting, no drinking on the river, and in bed by 9 p.m. when you have to work the next day." But apparently he loved to let loose.
When it was time to go to, it tore it up. You know what? Those are great sound words to go by today. If you got to work in the morning, you got to get to work in the morning. And whatever you need to do to get there. And they're legendary quotes. They're legendary. They're still accurate today.
Well, and the other quote that I remember hearing, which you just tied it together with the story, was right before he was murdered, somebody asked him where he was going, and he says, "I'm going to hell." And of course, you just described where they were, what they were doing, what that was all about.
Going to hell.
What about the person who murdered him? Whatever happened with that? Do we know?
I don't think, according to the history book that I read, they never found out who did it.
No way.
Yeah. So it's still an unsolved mystery. So you know what? As things get passed down, you know, you can only believe what you can believe or what you want to believe. But it's a pretty big story in Bay City.
Well, no. And everywhere. And I've had the pleasure of living in Wisconsin, and I've had the opportunity to live in Minnesota. But everybody talks about Paul Bunyan's from there. He used to knock down forests with one swoop of an arm. And he's buried there. And I remember just north of Stevens Point, Wisconsin, in a little town called Wausau, there's a little ski hill there now, Rib Mountain or Granite Peak. But they used to claim that Paul Bunyan was buried in that hill.
Well, because it's so big that Paul Bunyan, that's his burial mountain.
Right.
You know, like I said, because of it's so sketchy back there, you'd really have to do some forensic discovery to see where Joe Fournier, and believe me, probably back then, they didn't have you in customs, stopping in the customs, coming from Canada, North America. You just kind of swam over. I think it'd be very hard to authenticate if it was real story or not.
So what will they say about us someday, Joe?
I hope it's all good. I strive to do what's right, and I hope it's good. There's been a few nights, you know, that they were kind of a blur, and I don't think I was that big of an ass, but hey.
Well, history has a way of kind of growing and becoming a tale. And my wife was babysitting the other week, and one of the kids that she was watching brought up George Washington chopping down a cherry tree. Have you heard the tale? Have some of our listeners heard the tale?
Yeah. You know, it goes back to elementary. It's kind of vague, but George Washington cut down the cherry tree.
Yes.
Wood.
Well, so the story goes that when he was a child for his sixth birthday, his dad gave him a hatchet, and he apparently did what any six-year-old boy would have done in the woods and just started whacking away. And as the story goes, he whacked down his dad's favorite cherry tree.
At Mount Vernon.
And yeah. his dad scolded him and asked, "Why did you do this? Did you do this? Why did you do this?" And this is where the famous quote from George Washington, where he says, "I cannot tell a lie. I did it." Now, for the folks who haven't picked up on our fairy tale theme this evening, our fantasy theme this evening, this is actually a fabricated story by Parson Weems, who's an author of children's books. And it never happened. Apparently, it was just
fiction.
It was fiction, and he even Parson even wrote about it later on, saying, "Hey, this is it. It never happened." But it's the story, Joe, and it's the legacy of, you know, some of these fathers and these grandfather figures in forestry that they have a way of compounding and changing as things go on.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that, and it's. I think what makes most stories realistic is the conviction and the passion that you tell it. And you get a couple of people to bite it. Man, next thing they tell the next person, and then it gets ad-libbed to what they remember. Have you ever done the story around the campfire where you say a sentence and it goes around 10 or 12 people and it has to come back and they say what they say, then you read the sentence and see how different it is? I think there's a lot of that into play with what we're talking about, but in forestry and urban forestry, there are a lot of legends, and there's a lot of, I'm not going to say fabricated, but maybe stretched or manipulated or interpreted different and passed on differently.
And that's all part of the fun, as long as people are having fun with it. And as long as, you know, we're better for it. Right. I cannot tell a lie. Hey, who's going to argue with that?
Yeah. It's not like, again, just like go to bed before 9 if you got to work in the morning, and you know, and it's all good. It's all right. You know, and maybe that was a way that those authors used these role models with quality quotes. George Washington said, "Never say a lie." Now the kids now, "Oh my God, George Washington, I can't say a lie." So maybe it was some of that old school psychology to work younger kids as they were growing up to be upright citizens. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. And I think if an author was going to quote, I wonder what an author would quote you, Joe, but I think if an author or somebody was going to quote me, I think in this point in my life, they would probably say, "Liquor before beer, you're in the clear. Beer before liquor, you've never been sicker."
Yeah. Yeah, but you're young enough. You haven't made your legacy yet. You're working on it. You're an honest, energetic, upstanding young man that's doing the best you can do the right thing. So you still got time to really do a good job and make a good legacy. So when we wrap up, we call it a day and we get planted in the ground underneath a big old oak tree. Hopefully there's a smile there. So,
and there will be a quote that will say, "Just do it better."
Boom. That's all. That's a great one. All you got to do is do it better. You know, while we're on history, there was another one that came came to mind. And I'll keep bringing some up. You know, we talk about Johnny Appleseed. You know, there's another one, exact same thing like Paul Bunyan, the George Washington story. It was written and got really famous in the 30s and 40s by an author. And when I started the museum, and I hope to someday to be able to have this part of the museum on display for everybody to see and put their hand on it. But I actually have 3 logs from Johnny Appleseed's log cabin when Johnny Appleseed lived in Mansfield, Ohio. And it goes back, because Johnny Appleseed's real name is John Carpenter. I think it's Carpenter. Yeah. And he was a botanist, and he went around and established orchards for people. So it wasn't that he was barefoot with a bag of apples skipping through the woods with a tin pot on his head. He had a job. He was planting orchards. He was a botanist. He was a smart man, a businessman. Well, from 1810 to 1820, he lived in Mansfield, Ohio. And he had the only 2-story log cabin in Mansfield County. Well, John Chapman, that's his last name, not Carpenter. So what happened is that a friend of mine, Leonard Dolce, who owns Dolce Tree Care down in Mansfield, Ohio, makes maple syrup on his farm. So I went to the sugar shack, and I'm sitting there, and he goes, there's an antique, one half of the shop is the sugar shack, the other one's like a log cabin. Looks like you're going back in time. So he walks me in there after we're burning, you know, he's cooking down the syrup. I sit back and I'm sitting in this rocking chair, wood burning cast iron, wood burning stove, crackling. And he's got these huge 18 to 20 inch wide hand-hewed logs that he used for the separation between the 2 halves. And he goes, put your hand on that wall. I'm going, yeah, that's pretty cool. He goes, guess where that came from? And he goes, I'm like, I ain't got a clue. He goes, that's part of the Johnny Appleseed's home.
Wow.
Get out of here. And his friend bought the property, and they looked back in the deeds all the way back then, and it was his property. So it was John Chapman's property back in 1810. So he had part of Johnny Appleseed's log cabin in the sugar shack. So I asked him, I says, has he got any more? And he goes, I'll find out. 2 years later at an ISA convention down in Dayton, Ohio, he delivered me 3 logs that are in the warehouse archives that are actually part of Johnny Appleseed's log cabin.
That's so cool.
And just so you know, as a botanist planting orchards, Johnny Appleseed never planted an apple to eat. Because even back then, water purification was a problem. All his apples were tart orchards for making applejack liquor.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
That's awesome.
It is, because you had to have that, because a lot of times the water in certain areas was bad. So that was a safe way to have something that was fermented that couldn't go bad, and you wouldn't get sick from drinking it.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Joe, well, you know,
cool stuff out there.
There's a lot of cool stuff out there. And maybe on one of our next future episodes, we'll actually start to bring in some of these traditional foresters, and we'll start to bring in some different perspectives. And maybe hear their take and their tale about who some of their figures were that they really followed and that they looked up to. But Joe, it's been fun. It's been a pleasure. I've thoroughly enjoyed our time together. As always, I mean, thank you for coming on, and thank you for listening, folks.
Yeah. You know, and like I said, I think it's a great idea. Let's reach out and find some more fun things to talk about, Corey. I'm even thinking, I got a couple of my friends that are in the steel timber sports series. Let's get one of them on to talk about preserving a tradition. So I think it'd be fun. And yeah, always talking with you, Corey, is always a highlight of the week. And thanks to all the listeners for keeping us going.
Awesome. Thank you. See ya.
Night.
Hey, great topic today.
Yes, and lots of good information.
Yeah, probably one of our best yet.
If you enjoyed the podcast or have topics you would like to discuss, please send them to discoveringforestry@gmail.com. And please hit the subscribe button and tell a friend.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Joe.
And I'm Corey.
Signing out.